OT After Dark is a podcast run by two occupational therapists and is for adults only. The views on this podcast are our own and are intended for information and educational purposes only. We believe that sex and sexual pleasure are a human right for consenting adults, regardless of ability, age, gender, or sexual orientation. We discuss topics that cover a wide variety of sex and sexual practices. To be true to our strong views regarding inclusivity, we use common and slang terms regarding sexual topics, which may be considered explicit. Listener discretion is advised.
We have exciting news to share. We recently partnered with DirectRec, a free app for OT practitioners, PT practitioners, and speech-language pathologists.
DirectRec helps clinicians to find peer-vetted products, and we recently have added our own recommendations of products on DirectRec for sexual health and wellness.
We helped DirectRec get a little extra sexy. DirectRec helps clinicians share products and other digital info, like YouTube videos and Google Docs, with their clients.
DirectRec helps you to track clients' follow-through on your product recommendations. So to start using DirectRec, click on the link on our website at otafterdark.com or in our social media bios.
Hi, I'm Kay.
And I'm JJ.
And we're both occupational therapists.
And we're here talking to you about sex.
Tell us about who we got on the show today.
Today we have Sakshi Tiku. She is an OT from Mumbai, India. And let me tell you, we got a fun episode. We are talking about fantasies.
Sit back, relax, fantasize a little bit.
So today we are here with Sakshi Tiku, and she is an OT practicing in Mumbai, India. She runs the website sexloveandot.com, and her area of practice relates to sex, intimacy, and mental health. So welcome, Sakshi. We are so glad to have you here on OT After Dark.
Thank you so much for having me. I said it off air, but I'm also going to say it on air. I'm living my fangirl moment. And embracing it and acknowledging it, and I'll try to nail it down as well. So thank you for having me over.
We're so happy to have you. It's still weird for us to hear things like that. It's unusual for us still, but we like it.
I like how humble. It's okay. Been there, done that, but it's okay. Just take it. I'm giving it to you. Just take it.
We're just gonna take it in. That's okay. Our students keep us humble. Before we start about our topic today, is there anything else you'd like to kind of add to your biography, your OT biography, that you'd like to let our listeners know about your day-to-day practice in OT?
Well, that's so good. So at this moment, I won't add the whole idea of how I landed into it, but I do understand that how I diversified the services or practices that I offer as and when I started Sex, Love, and OT. So initially, it was just based for clients, and I was talking to clients as a counselor and an occupational therapist serving them. But in the whole routine and the whole area of actually telling clients that please go to an occupational therapist, I realized there aren't enough occupational therapists who are even talking about it or who even understand what's happening. So that sort of expanded into actually going ahead, mentoring students, clients, also OTD students who have their capstone projects, and this is happening globally, putting their inputs, being a consultant there. And another part of this extended into since I was working with kids from ages 3 years, and like the whole population that I work with currently is 3 years to somewhere around 95 years, which is very broad, very diverse. So, which also meant there will be an essential part of the entire team would be a parent and a caregiver. And that sort of, again, led to another service where I just connect with parents and caregivers to understand sexuality, sexual education, their role in giving that, and also facilitating that. And that is it. That is who I am. And then the other stuff, I just go ahead, illustrate, do some fun stuff on social media. And in my free time, I'm here doing this, meeting amazing people.
Excellent.
Yay.
So perfect segue, social media. One of your social media posts was kind of the catalyst for today's episode. And I'm going to refer back. Let's see. There's got to be a date on here. Way back to April 23rd, 2021. You posted about fantasies and you said using fantasies to explore and enhance intimate occupations can be fun. Here's how you need to stop. Here's how you need to stop overthinking your fantasies and start understanding them. So what kind of triggered you to start talking about fantasies related to intimate occupations?
I would say it was a very good poop. I got a lot of time to think about it. And then I think it was just one of those times where I'm thinking, I was working with a client currently and I was understanding how anxiety was for them in terms of sexual concerns. Solo, fine. Partnered, extremely overwhelming given the amount of trauma that they had experienced. Now when we come into it and think about things, I think on the toilet seat, I was just finding myself stuck with one of my clients. And then I was like, this is great. If we are thinking about things and if that changes how we feel, isn't that one of the ways when we try to do sensory guided meditations or visual meditations and we are trying to do that visual guided imagery? Isn't fantasy that? And aren't we sort of building upon it? And I was like, wow, this poop was really great. And then I sort of went back, sort of build on it. And I think that is how I've landed up even talking about fantasies in the first place, because I know when I had this conversation with my client and I was explaining about fantasies to them, the first idea of even sort of building on that visual image or even that mental image for that matter was associated with a lot of shame and guilt. Just because they think that their fantasy is somewhat weird or different, or it might cause infidelity. Just because thinking about someone else can release so many other emotions, however comforting she feels or they feel about exploring it. So I think this is where I started talking about fantasies and why is it important. And sort of made it a part of my detailed history as to if they ever act upon it, do they have any fantasies or not, have they ever tried to explore it through that, or do they use a erotica or audiovisual erotica, just to understand it a little better as to how are they even connecting with their own sexuality when there isn't an external stimulus. So how are they building on it?
So that it kind of triggers, we were in preparing for this, we were looking at the literature, as we do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One of the articles we found, Sexual Fantasy of Cisgender and Non-Binary Individuals, a quantitative study. And there was one of the things that kind of stuck out to us in the discussion in that, which we've talked about sexual scripts a lot on the podcast in the past, that we all develop these sexual scripts. And I'm just going to read, I'm going to quote this. The sexual scripts influence the individual's sexual imagery and fantasy, as well as their sexual behaviors. Thus, the object of our fantasies and the desirable characteristics of a sexual encounter is influenced by socio-cultural factors. And I think that kind of ties to what you're saying, is you're using these sexual scripts that we always have, but then we kind of dig into those sexual fantasies and use them to our advantage in that guided imagery, which I had never made that connection before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know. Yeah, I told you it was a really good poop.
It's a good poop.
Everybody who's listening, I'm really sorry. Who gets cringed by it? I'm really sorry. But
oh, yeah, no. Don't be sorry.
See, that is how it is, right? When we are talking about, I think I say this so often, and I would really be very happy to find the circles of sexuality someday in one of our occupational therapy textbooks. But the whole center of the circles of sexuality is us. And all of these are like six overlapping circles. I think you must be familiar with it. But this core circle is always you, which means whatever you do, think, feel is always going to affect and influence all the other circles that are out there. One of them is sexuality and sensuality, both. So it's not just your connection to yourself, but it's also going to influence your relational experiences, how you act on them, how you communicate on them. And then once we do talk about relational experiences, somehow keeping those fantasies to ourselves can sometimes feel empowering, but bringing that to bed with someone else and even exploring that with someone else is such a delicate balance of this power and control dynamics, that where if one time we think that we have got our sexuality under control with our partners, in the other moment, exploring that with fantasies can feel like losing that control, or probably for somebody achieving a greater control in that manner. But again, how do we find that balance into that unless we aren't sure how we restructure our sexual scripts that has been said again about fantasies, right? So I think that's a very delicate thing, I think, where I get to work with clients, but it's always the same barrier that we have to come past, which is shame. No matter what comes ahead, no matter what we are facing with our clients, but this beautiful, chaotic feeling of shame always is a barrier whenever I work with clients, no matter who that person is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which ties back to that cultural factors.
Yeah. And I think too, it kind of brings up the idea of, you know, with fantasies, that it's not necessarily something that someone wants to act on in turn. Sometimes it's just the fantasy of it. Sometimes that fantasy, you know, individuals might want to act on that fantasy, but sometimes it is just about that fantasy and being in that moment, and just about that piece itself. And I think that's what you said too, kind of bringing back to about that piece about shame, that, you know, like if I have this fantasy, it does that bring some shame, but does that necessarily mean that that's what I want to act on? You know, and kind of bringing those two pieces together.
Absolutely. I think, again, finding the balance, I think it's been said, if you have a sexual thought, you act on it. That is how we have been training. If we think about, if we feel aroused, we go ahead and masturbate, or we ask our partner to have to engage in any sexual activities. But when it comes to fantasy, we are combining the best of both worlds, which is our imagination and sexuality. And it's so much power to handle. And you do not exactly know how you're going to channelize it or how that empowers you. And I think taking them and walking them through that, and even asking them through this whole session about how are they feeling, how do they feel differently in their body when they think about a certain thought, what do they do next, how can they control it, how can they try to modify that, how are they feeling in person. And I think some people some people who have the ability, at least in my sessions, who have had a good ability to have a very, very concrete fantasy, were able to feel aroused without doing anything or without touching themselves. And that is how empowering that has been for them. And to put that into thoughts and, you know, modifying those fantasies into actions is again something that people can do. And they do not realize that that is still an option, because every fantasy by itself does mean something, but it also has an underlying emotion, like I said. Sometimes it's about power, sometimes it's about control, sometimes it's about security, but it's all something that comes down to an underlying emotion, even though the act in itself says something different. Mm-hmm. And so just understanding and helping them understand that what you're thinking isn't bad, but what you're seeking is somewhat this. So how do you think you can feel this emotion or this emotional security? You can find love, you can find intimacy. How would you want that for your partners, with your partners or with yourself to be changed? I think that becomes a very enlightening question for them, because they haven't thought about it that way. that there's a feeling associated to it. So we are so much focused on the thought that we still forget that there's something else that's facilitating it, some need that's facilitating that. So I think the need and the want have to be separated. They can come together whenever they want, in ways that they can perform it, in ways that are consensual, in ways that are safe, in ways that are absolutely fun for them and do not make them anxious, do not bring any other unwanted emotions that they want to feel. But again, it's the need and the want need to come together in such a beautiful way to co-create something really, really amazing.
How would you, so if we're, you know, a lot of listeners are either occupational therapy students or occupational therapy current practitioners that aren't necessarily addressing that they're wanting to address sex and intimacy more, what would you say to those people for how to, in a more traditional OT environment, which I know looks different around the world, but in a more traditional OT environment, how to bring fantasies into intervention?
You said intervention. So before that, I'm going to say history. Like I said, even like before starting this entire thing, there are very subtle ways of adding these things, because what happens is when you suddenly put yourself out there, if a client has approached you, they're already somewhat held back because they aren't sure that there's going to be any professional on the rehabilitation team or for the medical team that's going to talk about these things. But now that you are also diving into something extremely vulnerable. And when you're talking about fantasies, it's even more vulnerable, because some fantasies, I understand that it took a few sessions for my client to even tell them that they want to live a fantasy with their partner where they rape them. And then how do you go about, helping them fulfill that? Mm-hmm. How do you go about understanding what are they truly seeking? So that in itself becomes a huge challenge. So I think the whole key lies in the history, where even just in general, when we're talking about everything else, I do ask about questions like, do you use, even especially when they masturbate or just anything for that sort, how do you think it helps you to increase your desire? And what sort of stimulus do you use? And that's when I do add fantasies as well. I say, is it audios or is it audiovisual erotica? Is it porn? Do you use fantasies? And so on and so forth. So I think having these options and saying that word out loud in the very beginning helps them understand that, oh, this is an option and this is a valid option. So even if I'm doing this, and probably I can bring this up later up in conversation. And that sort of helps, actually. It gives a good segue when bringing up these interventions, because they do say, no, I can use erotica really well, but fantasizing about it is a little bit difficult for me. And that does give you an idea that for them to have a very good guided imagery is something that's actually problematic, because they are somewhat bounded with the scripts that we have been learning through the years. Because it's really difficult to break through the idea of pornography. It's readily available. It's there. We've been watching it. It's the first thing I think our peers even pass it on to us. So it's there. It's always available. But to close your eyes and imagine what you want, my God, that's a world that I think people rarely explore, because they really don't have the time. Everybody just wants to get laid quick, fast. And I think, yeah, that is what it is. It's like quick, fast. Did I do it right? Am I right? Is everything right? And then move past it. And I think that's where the whole thing is associated, and that's where it stops. So I think start with the history. And then I think it does help asking about interventions in the same way, that if they do not, would they be open to it? Basically, have they ever fantasized about anything? Was there a particular, I think even asking about them about a particular genre in pornography, it does really help in understanding how they can build on their fantasies. And someone who has never used any of these things, I do ask them to either go and read an audiobook. I go ahead, ask them to read any literature. And this is one of the most common sites, which is Literotica. It's just stories about desire and people having sex and making up and leading up to it, very short stories. But I think for a change, asking people to use other senses to register about sexuality, it's really important. We see pornography, the registration isn't much. But when I ask them to hear something or read something, I'm keeping that avenue open for them to actually fantasize and build on a sexual imagery. And after that, I think the intervention does become a little bit of a cakewalk, because now they are talking, they are sharing their experiences. And now I get to work with a lot of things where I can ask them how touching in this fantasy feels, how touching and exploring that with the fantasy feels, what are the emotions that you are absolutely liking or experiencing when you think about it. So that is how I think it's a good segue for me to work. And even when you're working in traditional roles, I think this doesn't need you to do a lot. It's literally just talking and sending them with some homework. So that's it.
So, looking through a lot of the literature and things about fantasies, now, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot within the field of OT regarding fantasies, sexuality, intimacy. So kind of a lot of it's really coming from the field of like psychology. Yeah. And a lot of the articles and things and the studies that I was finding, they were using the sexual fantasies questionnaire. And it seems that this assessment has been, it's in multiple different languages, different things like that. It was developed, I think, in 1978. And then in 2010, they kind of did a revamp of it. I think it's Wilson is the original author on it. But what's in it, and it's 40 different items to kind of talk about, okay, well, what kind of are your fantasies? I'm also kind of looking at these concepts of, are you having these fantasies in the daytime? Are you having fantasies during intercourse or masturbation? Do these fantasies occur while you're sleeping and during your dreams? Have you done these fantasies in reality, or are these things that you want to do in reality? So kind of really broadly looking at, well, what do these fantasies look like in all these different capacities, but also kind of then it separates it into these four different areas of, exploratory fantasies, intimate fantasies, impersonal fantasies, and also fantasies that relate to like BDSM, sadomasochism, those types of concepts, which I think is again, kind of looking at this in this broad frame of what do fantasies do for an individual? What type of fantasy do you have and where does it fit? Is it something that you're having dreams about? Is it something, you want to do in reality? Is it something that you think about during masturbation or intercourse and that's the only time that it comes up? So I think this concept of this sexual fantasies questionnaire is interesting. However, this is my little caveat here. as it is, I feel with a lot of these assessments, it's very geared towards cisgender individuals. So when looking at individuals that may be transgender or non-binary, a lot of these questionnaires and these questions don't necessarily fit the needs of those individuals. And I don't know if you have kind of run into that in your practice or have addressed any of those issues, or have you seen any of that come up when you're working with individuals?
See, that's the problem with assessments. Whenever I want to pick up a standardized assessment and give it to my clients, the thing is, there are so many queer people that I work with that this doesn't work. And they end up leaving triggering. And most importantly, me as a queer, every time that I read up any material on sexuality, I am somebody who is, as I read it as somebody as a brown queer person, and I have to understand if I can ever translate it for my clients, first of all. Second, if I would be given this form to fill out right now, would I find any bits of it triggering? And most of the times I have found it triggering, because it doesn't even talk about anything apart from, again, treating fantasy, like I said, it's still the part of you, but it's not the entirety of you. I still have so many other ways of expressing myself, my sexual orientation, my gender orientation, how that ties up to my sexual preferences is going to be completely different. But again, it's going to be a great influential factor, because it will decide how I want to have these, how I want to actually build on my fantasies for that matter, right? So I think these assessments, I find it really difficult. I pick what I love and then I give it to the clients, because I know that this is going to work, but then at some point I have to actually filter it through, because most of them to be very honest, yes, they are not inclusive.
No.
Sadly, they aren't inclusive.
No, we were reading through this one. It's interesting.
Well, and again, you know, putting it in the context that it was developed in, you know, the late 70s. And, you know, a lot of these assessments really haven't, they haven't been updated. And it's not inclusive. And, you know, it's, how do we get things there? I mean, it's a big undertaking too, to kind of revamp a lot of this stuff, but it needs to happen and move to have a lot of these assessment tools or interview strategies to be as inclusive as possible for a lot of our clients and our individuals that we're working
with. I don't even see this being used for people with certain limitations, people who have disabilities, people who are great cognitively. But again, even if we are trying to say we are using this for neurodivergent population, are we going to talk about fantasies then and there, right? Because are we going to question the cognitive abilities? Is that so? But that's really not the situation, right? I found, I've worked with one autistic adult, and for them, I think fantasies was one of the great ways to actually go ahead and even think about sex, to understand what arousal feels for them or even make sense of arousal for them. And I think we aren't being talking about this at all and how therapeutic talking about fantasies could actually be for them, right? And these assessments do no good. I think these are for able-bodied, again, cis, mostly heterosexual.
Yeah,
even if you want to change it just by a little bit, it would still be very, very heterosexual focused. But then there's an entire population who isn't neurotypical, no matter how quirky we are, but it isn't neurotypical. And in today's age, if we actually go ahead and see, we'd find more neurodivergent people than neurotypical people, given the kind of age we live in. So it's just highly disappointing. I don't know. I can try as much, but I again think that I will fail. But I'm okay to take up with that failure, because inclusivity, no matter what you do, you'll have to keep trying. I think even when we are talking about fantasies today, it is a reflection on the kind of work that we're doing, and we are trying to be inclusive. We aren't saying it can change everything, but we are saying, let's start somewhere. Let's get ahead with it. Probably some student will be really nice. They'll pick up the idea and they'll actually formulate some good literature for us someday.
Hopefully. Come on, OTD students and your capstones. Right. Do a fantasy capstone.
See, I don't have the avenues, but they can do it. So let's do this.
And you know, and maybe it's part that we can take these pieces and parts from some of these other frameworks, from some of these other disciplines, to then incorporate it into building an occupational profile. So, you know, it doesn't have to be so, you know, like regimented as an assessment tool, but we can take these concepts to develop that individual's profile.
Apply doing, being, becoming, belonging to fantasies would
be fun.
Speaking
my language right now. And I am speaking my language, and I love that, because we are saying occupational sciences and occupational therapy is a branch that exists because everything else exists. We are talking about occupations, and the fact that we just exist in itself gives us the reason to be there as a profession. And I don't know why, but it's a thing that I have seen, that if I talk about fantasies initially, some of them said it's completely and only used for psychologists and psychiatrists because they are the only ones who can talk about fantasies. And I'm wondering why.
Yeah.
I think even having that Eureka moment, understanding that it's still guided imagery, and we do that.
Yeah.
We talk about thoughts, we talk about framing things, we talk about building on our thoughts. Isn't that an occupation, and are we doing that already? So I think having that idea that we don't have to build everything from scratch. If somebody has laid down some amount of work, we can scrape away things that we really do not need to be using in today's age, because everything has changed drastically, immensely. In 2010, I think this would have been the game changer. But in 2022, it doesn't serve the purpose. We've come so far. And it actually makes me happy. Instead of saying that this is just, you know, this is a taboo. I'm like, it is not anymore. You just need to be talking about it. You are making it a taboo. So
well, so that that brings me to something that I want to talk about. And we've talked about this a lot, the idea that the first step for an OT practitioner or OT student is owning your own shit.
Yep.
And I think, yep. And with this, the first step is owning your own shit. And really, you need to reflect on how you feel about sexual fantasies, how you feel about porn, how you feel about erotic books. And you need to have a good understanding before you start talking to a client. Because if you have an issue with porn and you think that, like, everyone in porn is there against their will, as I know some people who think that, like, there is such thing as ethical porn. Not everyone believes that. But if you're going in there with that idea that porn is just the most evil thing, like, that's not going to help your client. If you're going in there and you think erotic books are a joke, it's not going to help your client. So I think that's my call to action. That would be my first call to action for OT practitioners and students, is really reflect on what you think about fantasies and making sure that you're not going in being judgmental on how people mm-hmm. fantasize.
That's the entirety of a practice. And people are so tired of me saying that, you know, what do you want? Tell me, what are you thinking? What are your views on it? How do you define sex? But I still see so many of them talking about sex as having it, or, you know, associating with orgasming, ejaculation, and having an erection, probably all the things that are still visible, but there is somewhere, like I said, the underlying feeling that I am enjoying this, that this is pleasurable, is not even a thing that's still on the table yet. And for us to even broaden that vocabulary and then add this vocabulary to our clients, or, you know, share this with our clients, is such a huge responsibility, because it's, you are not just working with one client, but this person is going to go ahead and talk to 10 other people and will be affecting 10 other people. And that other, and I think somebody will pick it on at some point in their time. And so and like you said, owning your shit, if people think that today we are comfortable, I had to scrutinize everything that I've ever said, everything that I've ever felt, or even question something as basic as for somebody to have a fantasy about, like I said, having a rape fantasy. I was so stuck for the first 2 days because I understood that I am being extremely biased, because I understand what sexual assault and trauma actually does to a person. And I'm thinking it from that direction. And it didn't really help me. It really didn't help me. I was, like I said, I was stuck with one of my clients, like, in such a situation, because I haven't come across it. So even if, when you're owning your shit, actually it helps. But if you feel stuck, it's completely fine. I think going back, tracing the steps as to what's really causing it. Is it your client or is it you? I think is the second question. That does really help. Because I've done that. This is non-cooperative. This is something very weird. This is a very wacky client. Giving a bunch of reasons. But again, at the end of the day, it does boil down to, am I doing the best that I can? Or am I just putting too much of myself into it? It's a very fine distinction. But I know. Anybody who gets inspired by these medical shows, I swear to God, I'm telling you, medical professionals cannot get as involved as it shows up in any of the medical shows that we see today. But they are never going to show you the life of a therapist who goes day in and day out just to see that today is a good day, but tomorrow, it just sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks so hard. Everything that they've worked on has just been regressed. You have to work again. And then again, that has to be patient, because you're still reassuring them that, you know what, it's not you. It's not you. It happens. It's human. But in the inside, you are just banging your head on a hard surface. That's the reality of it. And so if you were feeling the whole turmoil, I think that's why I think working with most of my settings, most of my work is based on explicit. I'm not saying that I just think about it, but that, now that I've been practicing in that context for such a long time, having and reviewing continuously at every stage, and just, again, tracing back my steps and understanding that this has happened, how am I changing that? And then reviewing and reevaluating on every stage has actually been helpful. Sometimes it's very triggering for me, but I have to own my shit, like you said.
Gotta own it.
Yep.
So let's talk a little. We found an interesting article, 7 Most Common Sexual Fantasies.
Yeah.
Let's see what they are, because they'll make some people uncomfortable. I think some of them. Number one, multi-partner sex is supposed to be the number one fantasy. And I don't know. They don't really give a lot about how they found this information. Number two, power, control, and rough sex. So specifically BDSM. Yeah. Third most popular, novelty, adventure, having some sort of variety. Fourth, taboo activities, something you're not supposed to be doing. Down at number five is where we get to passion and romance. Number six, non-monogamous relationships. And number seven, gender and sexual fluidity.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to know that, like, I think a lot of people think, I'm sure most people, like, you get that shame with your fantasy, like, oh, I must be the only one fantasizing about whatever on this list. But you're not.
Yeah.
You're not. And, like, and even if the practitioner themselves is thinking, like, oh, I've never had a fantasy like that, you got to know that people are fantasizing about all sorts of things.
All kinds of things.
No need to judge.
Humanity, I tell you. But anyways, I think if anybody wants to read up on it, there's a brilliant, brilliant book by Justin Lemuller, which is Tell Me What You Want. Go ahead, read about it. There's tons of information. I think that was one of the only, I think, researchers who had conducted, I think, had more than 4,000 or 5,000 Americans were reviewed for this. And then that's how they came up with some major areas as to which you already mentioned about multiple partner and then power play dynamics. Some of it also included some of a fetishization and like a blend of it. So I think it's a great book for you to even understand the whole aspect as to what your brain is really doing and then sort of put it into your practice, because it will, if you are somebody who feels that you're really biased towards it, I think this book can change some of the facts for you. I think, yeah, that's one of the good resources for you to go out to if you are not going to read up, because I think, again, research articles are going to be, not that this book again changes everything and not everything becomes inclusive, but I think the first step to even understanding and to even be inclusive, you first need to have some amount of information, and this book does a good job giving you that. Just giving the whole sciences of fantasies, which is really important to come out of your biases. So that could be the first step. And then it's just your personality. Add to it.
I mean, I have to say, the power of fantasies, I feel like, is very underrated, because I will admit that the most amazing orgasms that I have ever had in my life have always come from fantasies in my dreams. And they're just...
sleepgasms?
Oh, they're the best. The best. So the power of that fantasy, I feel like we really are just underutilizing that. To really just enhance that.
Well, and I think it's, you know, you mentioned about it tends to be in healthcare. These weren't your words exactly, but it tends to be in healthcare. You know, we talk about the penis, the vagina. Are we getting erections? Are we having orgasms? And I think most people, when they come to a healthcare worker and they're talking about sexual activity, that's what they think they need to be talking about. And then pleasure just gets, like, left out of the room. It's not even in the conversation. So I think changing that narrative too, that saying, yes, there are people that we can talk about pleasure. It doesn't have to just be, can I get an erection or not? Am I lubricated enough that we can really talk about pleasure and all the different elements of pleasure, all the ways to achieve pleasure. Mm-hmm. Sleepgasms.
They're my favorite. They're
the best. We know it. It's the best.
We need to talk about that more.
We could do a whole episode on it if you want.
No, but I think, like you said, I have to again and again clarify this, that sex is first on the brain and then happens everywhere else. So ideally, if the biggest sexual organ, definitely skin, but also brain. It's doing everything. That bitch has got everything under control. It's handling everything. It's telling us what we need to do, think, feel, act, process, comprehend, everything. So when you say fantasies can be so powerful, they can be, yes, they are so powerful because they primarily act on the brain. It's happening from our head first. So imagine the power of it, because we are creating it. We are the creators. It's like God. It's like literally playing God, if that concept ever exists. So it is powerful because it starts from us. It's created within us, from us. And it is one of the most purest ways of saying that this is what you want. This is what you need. This is what you're looking for. And then bring it up into a sensory play that can be enacted in some way or the other, or not. Again, but I think it's such a powerful, powerful sensory play. And who doesn't love that?
Yeah, exactly. And it can be done with somebody else or alone. And
or with multiple people.
Yeah, that's the beauty
of it. Multiple people. I know. And if you think, again, I'm going to add this because it's after shame, the second thing is always infidelity. And I think I want to add this to people that how do you define it? This is this good starting point for you to go about it. Do you think talking with other people counts as infidelity? Or thinking about them causes gossip is something that you count as infidelity? Or, you know, just thinking about engaging in sex with someone is infidelity? And that's something that there is no moral consensus about. For me, I don't have a problem. I love Chris Evans. Oh my God. Okay, anyway.
I mean, yep.
But that is problematic for me. I don't count it as problematic. But if my partner does, they can go away. But Chris Evans is here to stay. So, again. I think this is somewhere that you need to, and that in itself is such a hard-drawn boundary about yes, no's, and maybes. That yes, this is what you want. No, probably you're not interested in this. And maybe, you know what, I could think about it. I could. This is fair enough. Or maybe this is, we can have a debate about, okay, is this infidelity for us? And maybe probably found a middle ground in other relationships. But I think having that clear-cut boundaries about this is what infidelity is for me, this is what's a deal breaker, this is what I'm fine with, I think does help a lot in relational experiences. Mm-hmm. And just even if it's casual for that matter, I think it can be a really powerful tool to, again, navigate that.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about Chris Evans' fantasies now.
Right.
I know, right?
A little Chris Evans ass. Yes.
I was going to say that. Oh, my God. It's a nice one.
Anyway. Oh, well, it's the moment of silence.
Right. Fantasies. We'll just all fantasize for a moment. Take a minute.
Exactly. It's just a moment of pleasure.
A moment of silence to all listeners. Just have a moment. What's your fantasy? Good. I hope everybody right now is having a little thought. I feel like we're at a good place for some closing thoughts. What are your closing thoughts for us on fantasy and occupation?
As long as, again, it's the same thing. Fantasy in itself, again, is a mini occupation in itself. You are occupied with thoughts. You are actually being in that moment with those thoughts. You are trying to act on them, not act on them, but you do them, you do not do them. But again, it's such a beautiful way of using the whole hardcore concepts of OS, doing, being, becoming. And do you really want to become that, not become that? The thing with fantasies is that it's so extremely powerful that you can just keep it to yourself and enjoy, like we did a minute back. Or you can bring in other people, share it with them. And that's really completely 100% up to you. So, and if not, one takeaway would always be that do it safely, do it consistently. Please make it pleasurable and do not forget yourself in the process, and go ahead and fantasize.
Fantasize.
At least try it.
Yay.
At least try it.
Beautifully said. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Sakshi, for being on OT After Dark. This was a pleasure.
Another great episode in the books.
I loved the fact that Sakshi said that fantasy is an occupation in itself.
I love that idea came to her while she was pooping.
You know, and I think I just need to be a hell of a lot more mindful when I'm pooping from now on, because who knows what kind of brilliant ideas are out there.
Mindful pooping is where all the capstone ideas are about sex and intimacy. Oh, students, get pooping. JJ, tell them where they can find more information about Sakshi.
So you can find Sakshi's work on her website, sexloveandot.com. And there is also links to all of her social media accounts where you can follow her and get more information about sex, intimacy, and occupational therapy.
And as usual, our website will have all the resources that we talked about today. Maybe include a little something about Chris Evans' ass there too. I don't know, we might make a good picture of that.
Maybe a little link there,
a little something. So yeah, fantasy. Everybody needs to finish this episode and think about what your favorite fantasy is.
Exactly.
In the meantime, don't forget,
sex is an ADL. Cheers.